ready? Are we fucking now? We're ready to fuck now? Okay, here we go.
Ready to fuck now. Hello, the internet, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 4 of the Daily Zeitgeist for October 19th, 2017. It's the penultimate episode, the one where people die. A Stringer Bell died in the penultimate episode. The Battle of the Bastards happened. Is this...
Hank died in the penultimate episode.
My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Potatoes O'Brien, a.k.a. Young Jackfruit, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Woo! A.k.a. Fuck it. Mr. Biracial.
Yeah. And we're joined by Edgar Montplaisir.
You guys already know. Oingo Boingo.
Boingo.
First returning guest. Also our first guest.
Am
Edgar,
I right, ladies?
What's the weirdest thing you've searched in the past couple days?
It was something called Hick Hop.
It's bigger than
Hick Hop.
Hick.
Yeehaw!
It's basically trap music, but for the people who believe that Confederate statues should still be up.
Oh, no.
Check it out. Some people to look up is Up Church. And the Jaguars boys or something like that. Check them out. It's like people being like, the Confederate flag is dope.
Right.
Like, it's pretty
yeah,
wild.
Yeah, then there's like these like, I don't know where these black dudes came from that are in the video that are like just chilling with the Confederate flag guys.
Covering their face up.
No, they're like in it.
I guess
hillbilly, being a hillbilly isn't exclusive to white people, I guess is what.
Right.
But then there are the artists who are just, you can tell, are just like straight up racist doing hip hop.
I can't tell if like the guys who are... The performers like think it's hilarious and are like, you know, those dudes who like do like frat rap and are like, haha, get it? Yeah. It's rap.
No, some of these are like,
they're into it, bro.
They're into it.
Riding on 44s.
Yeah.
I'm gonna lift the truck, rolling coal.
Check that out. Or
peep it.
Don't. What's one overrated thing?
Currently, Stranger Things Season 2.
Ooh,
it hasn't
shit.
Even come out yet, but niggas is already just like, ah, so I think that's overrated.
Although, I like the billboard where it has the sheriff walking through a pumpkin patch. Pumpkin patches, underrated.
In terms of white things?
Charlie Brown, like, did it, and it was dope, and there hasn't been a
Fucking jocking Charlie Brown style.
No, I'm happy. I'm happy someone brought it back to the
pumpkin
patch.
Wait, so you're just saying it's overrated because the hype around it is just, you're just exhausted from it?
Me? Yeah. I think, like, two of my friends are in two different Stranger Things musicals right now. And it's just like, yo, chill the fuck out. I don't need this. Like,
you know? The fuck does that mean?
Like, there's, like, a bunch of, like, homage Stranger Things musicals going on in LA right now. Go on Facebook, look at your events, and put Stranger Things musical. I bet you you'll find, like, a ton of invites to people doing these stupid ass Stranger Things homage shits. It's like, fuck that. It's not even that good. Where are the Wire musicals? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. The Funny or Die did a sketch for the Wire musical, and it was good. Yeah, and they actually got some of the cast. It was awesome.
No, it was an actual thing. You should look it up.
Yeah.
They did do the Wire musical?
Yeah, didn't it?
I think it was just a video that was like...
Well, not the whole thing, but in it, wasn't there like a...
Yeah,
there was a musical, like,
what would be
the Wire musical.
Yeah.
Right. It was awesome.
That sounds dope.
What's underrated?
Underrated is Mindhunters on Netflix. I decided to go with overrated and underrated on Netflix. Mindhunters.
Sensing a theme here.
You gotta check it out. It's about these dudes who are trying to understand, like, it's like in like the 70s or 80s, I think.
Yeah.
And they're trying to understand why, it was the 60s. They're trying to understand why these murders, these sequence murders, they keep calling them, keep happening. It's like before we came up with the term for serial killers.
Right. And it's the first dudes who like came up with the idea of profiling serial killers.
Yeah.
Right?
Because like before everyone was just like, they're just depraved and they're born that way. But it's all about, is morality something that we're born into or is it something that we're taught? And I love conversations like that.
Where do you come down on that?
I think it's something that we're taught. Like, I don't believe Charles Manson was born a killer. I mean, if you look at his life, it's probably like one of the most fucked up ways to grow up as a kid. And I think that that leads to the kind of repercussions that we get. I think society plays a bigger role in the monsters that it creates than it's willing to accept.
Nature versus nurture.
Yeah. I personally think we're all born killers and then we have to be taught not to do that.
How do you feel about homosexuality?
Yeah. Let us know.
What is that?
Put him to the sword.
Well, all right. Yeah.
See, he dodged that one.
He dodged that.
How do I feel about homosexuality?
Oh, way to Sarah Huckabee that one.
Oh, Sarah.
She's so good at the dodge. We're just watching her deal with the fallout from Trump's condolences to military families. Condolences in
quotes.
Scare quotes, yeah.
Scare quotes.
All right, so we're going to do five stories again. Five stories we're keeping an eye on. We're going to start off with driving deaths on U.S. roads are up for a second year in a row.
Hey.
Which, if you're not following,
back to back.
Right. If you don't follow trends in U.S. road deaths, they have been going steadily down for many years as cars have gotten safer and safer and safer. And then for the past 2 years, it's been sort of a upward spike, and they're trying to figure out why this is happening. Apparently we are speeding and drinking a little bit more, maybe in reaction to the safeness of the cars. We're like, well, we can get away with this shit. No, nothing's going to kill me now. But we're not doing it that much more than usual. We're not drinking and speeding that much more than, we did in the past. It's like up 2% and the deaths are up way more than that. 14%, year over year, which is crazy. So, they think it has to do with, big surprise, smartphones, which smartphone use in that time period has gone from 75% to 81% of the U.S. population. And they point to the trend that we have stopped talking on our smartphones. We used to talk, and that was a thing that you would get in trouble for, right? Like
right,
talking
holding
on
the
your
phone to your head, right?
Right, but that is apparently way safer than any of the shit we're doing now, which is texting, getting on Twitter, checking Facebook, Instagram. All that shit it requires way more attention than, you know, having
just
the phone.
Talking, right?
Yeah, just like yelling at your phone. So yeah, we can blame it on the millennials. Phew. I was worried there for a second, but yeah, it's definitely the millennials. And sort of a hidden facet of this trend is that the increase in fatalities has actually been mostly among people outside of the cars. So,
wow.
The cars have gotten, yeah, exactly. You're a serial pedestrian, right?
I'm one of the only five people that walks in LA.
Right.
That isn't homeless.
It's a walking city.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But yeah, so basically the cars have gotten so safe that we're basically indestructible.
Right.
Go test that theory out. But people, because they are paying less attention, we pay attention. Like when you're concentrating on your phone, you can keep track of like one thing with your out of your peripheral vision. And, you know, so you can like look at traffic that you're in and keep track of like the cars that are around you. But your like CPU doesn't make room for like someone crossing the street or bicyclists or motorcyclists.
Okay. Allow me to deposit a question.
Yeah, please.
If you're texting on your phone and you're not looking up, and then this dude is texting on his phone while he's walking, and then you guys hit each other, who's at fault really?
Both, probably. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, the dude who's walking is dead, so
yeah.
So he's not around to go to prison
to litigate,
yeah.
Right? But yeah, so I mean, that's the thing to watch out for.
Because I text and walk all the time.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, you're terrible.
Do you ever trip
about
and fall?
That.
You ever trip though? Like, do you ever walk into shit?
I've run into shit. I ran into a baby once.
Yeah,
like a baby that was just on the loose.
It was in a carriage, and the parents started yelling at me, and I was like, "Hey, yo, watch your baby!"
Yeah, right.
Before I flip this fucking carriage, B.
You did the "I'm walking here" speech
yeah.
to the parents.
I'm walking here.
I'm walking here. Yeah. So pay the fuck attention.
Yeah.
When you're
get
out
off
driving.
Your fucking phone. What's next?
Up next, Trump is fucking up comforting military families. All he would need is like a script of like, here are acceptable things to say, and here is the name of the person you're calling. I think 20 Americans have been killed in action since he became commander in chief in January. And he is fucking it up. He hasn't bothered to get that script or learn the names of the people he's calling.
And it's so wild because the dude is black and his name is David Johnson. I feel like Trump could have
David.
Oh, he could have just taken a guess and he would have gotten it right. Like, it's just such a
he probably, yeah, with his racist ass, he probably would assume the last name was Johnson.
He's like, Lieutenant Johnson. And he's like, oh, thank you, sir. Like, he would have been, it's such a shot in
the
dark.
Well, yeah, so, like, with that story, so basically we talked last week about how in Niger there was, like, an ambush that killed some Green Berets and Trump has not acknowledged it, you know, for what, like 12 days or something. He finally reached out to the family of one of the soldiers who was killed and told his wife, who's pregnant, that, you know, her husband knew what he signed up for.
Jesus Christ.
In his call to to send his condolences. So right. Yeah, he's fucking up the most basic shit. And then also there are also people who were listening to the call were saying he didn't even actually know his name. He kept saying your guy. You know, it must be sad. Your guy. Like, really?
Yeah, man. That's insulting.
Oh, man.
Yeah, like, I'm somebody who really is bad at remembering people's names and, like, being like, hey, your guy over there is not, that's not smooth.
That's
like,
not, yeah.
You're somebody who is, yeah,
that's
my dude.
My dude. I'm like, hey, what up, my dude?
If Trump had been like, your dude,
he could have easily said, your husband.
Right. Your guy there.
Yeah. Yeah, that nigga.
You think he would have gotten away with that?
That's I think so.
At this point, I mean, probably he would have. Who knows? Right. Nothing can stick to this dude.
If he had said, yo, your husband was the realest nigga alive, like, I think it would have been okay.
Yeah, probably. Probably fine.
At least better than being like, yeah, he knew what he was getting into.
Right.
Yeah.
And there was a congresswoman apparently present with the wife there comforting her. Who heard the call and was like, ooh, this is not good, and came out and said so. And we just watched the press conference with Sarah Huckabee Sanders just basically saying that the congresswoman is disgusting for having politicized this
right
event.
Oh, I mean, I don't know. I low-key kind of – I mean, I don't agree with Sarah Huckabee Sanders 100%, but – I don't know. This congresswoman kind of looks like she's looking for FaceTime just a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Like, especially that hat that she was wearing.
I mean, yeah, Frederica Wilson's
whole. You got to see that hat.
Yeah, she's got the auntie hat at church.
It was blinged out, bro. It was a cowboy hat with bling on it.
But I mean, she was there comforting the woman, so it's like, I mean, at least her head was in the right place.
True.
You know? She was like, it's not like she showed up for a. You know,
like a photo shoot or something.
Yeah, or whatever.
Yeah.
And also, that's like her swag. She's always wearing that.
Right. She's just got dope hats.
But yeah, the other issue with fallen soldiers was that Trump even dragged out John Kelly's son, who was killed in action, to say Obama never called him, when in fact, like, he had hosted John Kelly at a breakfast at the White House for Gold Star families. And, you know, there's not a lot to know, like, why exactly Trump decided to say something like that. There's rumors that Sarah Huckabee Sanders may have had something to do with it, suggesting that was something worth saying. But, yo, I know John Kelly is not fucking happy with having his son being used, like, as a talking point for Trump, especially when it's something probably so – I mean, man, that shit is – it's just fucking insensitive. It's inhumane to do something like that. And – who knows what those conversations are like now? If like John Kelly's like, "Yo, dude, keep my son's name out your fucking mouth."
Yeah,
but almost, I don't know.
Almost definitely, he said that word for word.
Yeah, like I said earlier, we were saying he's.
I know John Kelly, which I don't.
Yeah,
that's probably what he was saying. Sarah Huckabee Sanders at the press conference was like, "Well, I think the general is just mad about people politicizing his son's death." And like, it was like, wait, you've like kind of worked yourself in such a circle that you didn't realize you're talking about yourself now. Yeah, like, you guys are the ones who politicized his death.
It's exhausting being up there.
It is.
Catching L's every fucking day. Well, not every day, but whenever
they
do. She
just looks exhausted.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I don't know. It just seems like maybe Trump is a person who doesn't know what to say in that situation because he doesn't have any experience with sacrifice, like sacrificing for his country. That idea is like totally foreign to him. His idea of sacrifice is that he gave up his career to be president. But I feel like he equates everything to a dollar figure, which is probably why he apparently offered the father of a different fallen soldier $25,000, which I guess the guy was saying he was struggling financially. So in theory, not the worst thing in the world, actually kind of a generous thing. But then he never followed through until the guy told the media that Trump had offered him $25,000 and never followed through. And then he was like, oh, yeah, no, that check's in the mail. So, yeah, in summation, even a layup, and even when he's, like, doing the right thing, offering someone $25,000 who's struggling with money, even then he manages to fuck it up.
Yeah.
All right, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, opioids! And we're back. So in this segment, I wanted to talk about a 60 Minutes Washington Post investigation. 60 Minutes aired their report on Sunday of the week that this is airing, and it was pretty incredible. There's been some fallout since then, and this is just a story that we're incredibly interested in, just because it's an ongoing health crisis in America. It's a my wife works in pain management and is like dealing with people who are hooked on opioids every day. So this is like, you know, a battle that she has to deal with on a regular basis. And so the story basically was an interview with a ex-DEA agent who's basically a whistleblower. His name is Joe Ramesseze. And
wait, any relation to Steve?
I was gonna say
disgraced 9/11 guy.
No, I don't think so.
Wasn't he say he was like in 9/11?
Yeah, he said that he was like almost in the tower or something like that, or like almost got on the plane. It was something where he lied and then like quickly got debunked.
Anyway, sorry to get sidetracked.
That is such a weird story, though.
It's like, it was weird. Oh, just to get more sidetracked, he was on Curb recently, and I was like, how the fuck are you working again? Like, yeah. I thought you got fucking blacklisted.
Nah, right. He did the last season of The League after that.
Hmm. So, anyways, this DEA whistleblower was saying that pharmaceutical companies knew that they were pushing dangerous addictive drugs out into communities, that it was killing people, and the DEA was trying to stop them, and distributors and these pharmaceutical companies basically ignored all these requirements they were putting in place to report suspicious orders. Like when a town of 1,000 people would get an order for like 5 million opioid pills. Like, yo, dude, that
seems
makes
like trafficking.
No sense.
Yeah.
Right.
At all. So the DEA started cracking down on these major drug companies. And obviously in America, that becomes a problem because major drug companies have lots of money and really, really rich people who whose wealth and fortune is at stake. So these companies complained to Congress and the Justice Department and basically used their money to pressure them to get the DEA to go easier on them. So there were two reactions to this in the DEA. So the whistleblower and his team are like, well, fuck that. People are actually like dying here, like on a day-to-day basis, people are dying. Mm-hmm. The other reaction is actually a good case study in how impossible it is to like solve problems in America, because these big corporations basically went after other DEA attorneys and were like, what are they paying you? We'll pay you double. You come work for us and tell tell us basically the weaknesses in the cases that the DEA is trying to bring, so that like the DEA was fucked. That like all these dudes were just going and joining the other side for
like Aaron Brockovich.
Insane amounts of money. Yeah. So in 2013, Congress crippled the DEA's ability to enforce the Controlled Substance Act, which is how they were kind of enforcing all this shit up to that point. They characterized it as a way to ensure pain medication was accessible for patients who needed it, which was not America's problem at that point.
Right. They're like, we need the fiends to have easier access.
Yeah. Right. But it basically just took away the DEA's ability to freeze huge suspicious shipments of prescription drugs. And people knew, like completely knew, that this is what was going to happen. A 2015 Justice Department memo said the bill quote, could actually result in increased diversion, abuse, and public health and safety consequences, aka people dying. So the villain of this story is the key sponsor of that bill in Congress is a guy named Tom Marino from Pennsylvania. He's in his fourth term, who until recently, until like a few days ago, was actually Trump's nominee for U.S. drug czar. The position that is supposed to be in charge of fighting the opioid epidemic.
It goes all the way to the top.
Right. That is who sponsored the bill. And also, the his other big cause, other than making it easier for people to get opioids in the midst of the opioid epidemic, is trying to is voting against any marijuana legalization. He voted like tons of times against bipartisan measures to prevent the Justice Department from going after legal medical marijuana businesses. He voted against a measure to allow Veterans Affairs doctors to recommend medical marijuana to their patients. And like, that's, you know, my wife used to work in a veterans hospital, and like they need all the help they can get because, you know, veterans are coming back from war. They have like lots of pain they're dealing with psychologically and physically. And he also voted against a measure that would have loosened some of the restrictions on CBD oil, which is a non-psychoactive derivative of the cannabis plant that allows, that is like seen as incredibly promising for treating severe forms of childhood epilepsy and also pain.
Helps a lot with pain.
Right. It gets rid of the thing, the one thing that like they could be objecting to, which is like it gets people high. It doesn't get people high.
Yeah, it's purely like
it gets rid of the fun part.
Well, and the thing is too, there are a lot of pharmaceutical companies who are trying to synthesize their own version of CBD to try and get the jump on the legal marijuana industry too.
Right.
And, you know, trying to jam people up in court over this shit too.
Right. So the reason the pharmaceutical industry is fighting this is because marijuana legalization in Colorado led to a complete reversal of the opioid overdose deaths in that state. After Colorado's legalization of recreational cannabis, opioid-related deaths decreased more than 6% in the following 2 years. So it's been shown to be incredibly effective and like a good way to treat pain that doesn't involve the risk of getting people hooked on drugs that might kill them.
But why would that make people mad, Jack? I don't get it.
Right.
Cuts in their fucking profits. And like, yeah, the other thing is like, any, like states with medical marijuana laws, they prescribe less pain pills because people are like, oh, I have the option to do something where I'm not just, you know, melted off opioids all day.
Yeah.
They're going to go for that. And it just shows you who's really like one of the biggest driving forces behind this anti-legalization movement. It's clearly the pharmaceutical companies, because we all know the healing power of weed.
Right. Painkiller prescriptions dropped in the 17 states that had medical marijuana laws in place by 2013. Painkiller prescriptions dropped drastically, so they were making less money. The average doctor in a legal pot state prescribed 1,826 fewer doses of painkillers in a given year.
Jesus.
So Tom Marino, who, like I said, up until this 60 Minutes report was Trump's pick for the drug czar, because his main issue is prosecuting marijuana, which, by the way, the Jeff Sessions' main issue, he thinks marijuana should be treated like more like were treated as a bigger crime than it ever was. Like,
I have my theory on that.
What's your theory on
that? He's a very small dude, so, like, I've hung out with a lot of small dudes. When they get high, they get fucked up and stupid, so I think it's because he can't,
he can't hang.
He can't hang, so he's taking it out on marijuana.
He, like, kept trying it and, like, thought it would, like, make him happier and, like, more laid back, but it just, like, made him, like, really freaked out.
Yeah, it just opened up all the demons he had inside. Like, you're fucking up, Jeff, you're a fucking demon. Like, you look like a Keebler elf. Yeah,
he doesn't like it, so he's taking it out on everybody who's having fun on it.
Yeah. And so Tom Marino, like I said earlier, is a representative for Pennsylvania, where hospitalizations for heroin overdoses have quadrupled since 2010.
Jesus.
Overdoses for prescriptions like Oxycontin and Vicodin are even higher. The total number of overdoses is nearly four times the number of fatal traffic accidents in Pennsylvania.
How the fuck? I mean, how are you even a fucking human, right? Where you're firsthand seeing this in your own state, yet you can just go and be a total shill for the pharmaceutical companies like this. And it's a completely at odds with your duties as a representative of Congress for the people of your state.
Because that vacation home in New Hampshire, bro.
I mean, exactly. So sad. But like, yo, again, you know, money is a corrupting force.
And, you know, they're dealing with the heads of the pharmaceutical like companies who like they're like, oh, we're friends, you know,
he's
a good guy. And like probably, they have like that good guy network.
And he's probably not even thinking of like what this translates to in his state. He's like, well, these people are hooked on drugs anyway.
Like, right. You know, yeah. And like to give you an example of how he thinks about drug use and drug addicts, he recommends for nonviolent drug offenders, they should receive criminal charges that will be held until they agree to forced hospitalization, which the hospitals that he is like recommending, he has called hospital/prisons.
Wait, like as a verbatim, he called it a hospital/prison. Okay.
Yeah. So he shouldn't just be withdrawing from the drug czar nomination. He should resign from representing Pennsylvania and, you know, be forced to work for free in like a rehab center for the rest of his life.
Get some perspective.
Yeah. But I mean, so it's not all bad news. There is a PBS documentary that was just released on Southern California pain clinics that are actually doing a good job of fighting back against the opioid epidemic. Mm. It's actually the Kaiser Permanente. It's like the company my wife works for, and they're, you know, using all these other ways of treating pain. Like they're trying to go after it. Basically, opioids like mask the pain, whereas, you know, the pain has a cause. And so like a good pain physician is supposed to go after the cause of the pain, not just like sort of cover it up. And it was only ever supposed to be used for like surgical pain or broken bones or like pain that, you know, is going to eventually be over. And the problem with, like, the way it's being used currently is that people will, like, use it for a bad back or something.
It's
that's
like, don't do
chronic
yoga or, try and lessen your nerve pain.
Yeah.
Like, just fucking take these pills and, you know, off the rest of the day.
Right.
Growing up Adventist, like, I would always get taken to these health seminars and shit like that. And I remember at one of them, this woman said something and put up this image that, like, stayed with me, which she said, like, American medicine is this. It's mopping the floor while the water's still running. And it's like an image of like a sink that's overflowing, and it's just like doctors like wiping the floor and I was like, listening to this fucking epidemic, is that's exactly what it is. Is they're prescribing this problem rather than trying to get to the actual cause of it, and it's just leading to just a ton more of bullshit. Like I don't know.
Well, because it's just making so much money.
Right. Exactly.
Rather than solving the issue.
Yeah, I had an eighth grade history teacher who was like, you know why pot's illegal and alcohol isn't? It's because you can grow a great batch of weed without the government's help, but you can't, like, alcohol that you brew in your bathtub is going to taste like shit. So they can't ensure that they're the ones making money off of pot, whereas they can make sure that they're making money off the alcohol. And I think, like, that I think about that so often because it really, like, applies to so many things. Like, the government can't make money or, like, these, you know, Fortune 500 companies can't make money off of yoga. They can make money off of, you know, these pills being overprescribed.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that that whole debate too is part of like inside the legalization argument, especially in California, is sort of like some people are weary of legalization because that would suddenly open the door to corporations to begin mass producing marijuana or mass growing operations and just like blow out entire warehouses and just get like, you know, a huge harvest that would eventually, and like that's what small time growers are like, yo, this is not good.
Legalization
opens up it's a slippery door too, because that allows for what you're talking about, Jack, is where Congress or these companies rather are saying, hey, well, we're making like this super lab weed, like that's so fire, like and we're going to make it so cheap because we can grow it in mass. So it's a complex thing too.
I'll still smoke mom and pop weed.
Oh, yeah. Artisanal weed for life.
Yeah. That Silver Lake weed?
Mm-hmm. Man. Yeah. Weed, I don't smoke anymore, but the last time I smoked, weed had gotten like so fucking strong. I was just like complete. I went Jeff Sessions on myself. I was like, Jesus,
you look like
Christ.
An elf. You look like an elf.
Yeah.
Like, shut the fuck up, head.
It's definitely whoever the comedian is who is like, we're smoking cancer medicine. Like, that's how strong it is. That was definitely felt true the last time I smoked. All right. So that's all I've got on opioids. Anything else before we go to another break?
I think what's interesting is when you've talked about in the past about how your wife deals with a lot of people who are hooked on opioids and how it's even a very difficult situation for doctors when you have to tell somebody who is addicted to opioids that you are no longer giving them. You're no longer prescribing them that drug, even though it's for their own benefit. Like, I'm sure that that's a very tough thing for someone to deal with. And you get, I'm sure, very aggressive, agitated people.
Oh, yeah. They're inheriting a patient population who are already hooked on these drugs and who got hooked on them by doctors prescribing them. So, like, they're not going to be happy. Like, somebody who is a literal drug addict, and this is me talking, like, this isn't what she says. She can't, like, talk about specific patients, obviously, because of doctor-patient confidentiality, but like just observing myself, they're inheriting a patient population who are like drug addicts. They're, you know, the people who like rob people on the street and shit and like break into cars to steal the car stereo to boost it at a
What is this, 1988? Boosting a car stereo?
What are you talking about?
We don't have stereos anymore. Anyway,
what kind of guys walking around with big boom boxes? You know what I'm talking about?
No, but like, yeah, whatever. But like, so it's like drug addicts can be scary people. And so like standing in between them and being like, yo, you can't have your drug and like... It can be a dangerous
Especially with the pattern that they're used to is go to doctor gives you drugs.
Right.
And then you're good. And then if the patterns change, like, my God, like, I can only imagine the kinds of, I mean, fuck, man, I get mad when I don't eat.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, no, Miles is a monster when he doesn't eat.
Exactly. I mean,
it's really scary.
I think my final thought on it is that I feel like every black barber is vindicated right now because for years they've been telling us that the government is behind the drug problem in America, and they're like, hell yeah, I fucking told you. And they're hella mad.
What'd I say?
Yeah.
You know what I've been saying.
I've been saying it for years, and then now 60 Minutes does it all of a sudden. Everyone wants to believe 60 Minutes. Yeah. Then go to your black barbershops. Don't buy into CBS's bullshit.
So just now that Marino has, you know, withdrawn his name from consideration as U.S. drug czar, that means that we have no head of the DEA. I think there's like an acting administrator, but there's no head of the DEA, no drug czar, no head of Health and Human Services. And that's in the midst of, you know, one of the worst drug epidemics. I think they say it is the worst drug epidemic in the history of the United States in terms of lives lost. And Trump, you know, he had... Like, Christie was in charge of, what was it, a panel?
Like an opioid commission,
And the opioid commission. And he came out and was like, okay, this is a huge emergency. There's a 9/11 every week and a half, putting it in terms that a East Coast politician can understand. And
how many people fit in Yankee Stadium? Right, how many 9/11s?
And so Trump came out of that meeting and was like, all right, I am calling this a national emergency. We are in a state of emergency, but he didn't like officially declare it. I don't know if he even realized that like he needed to officially that it was an official declaration.
It's like Michael Scott in The Office when they're like, you have to declare bankruptcy. And he just goes on the office like, I declare bankruptcy. And it's like, fam, that's not how you declare bankruptcy.
Right. It's an official declaration that like frees up funding. And he still has yet to do that. I guess the good news is that it is being prosecuted at the local level. You know, they're arresting doctors who are, you know, just prescribing the shit out of these pills and actually like having people die. Yeah. 2015, we had our first doctor convicted of murder, which is...
That's wild, man.
Yeah.
Hey,
like doctor,
out.
Yeah, being convicted of just straight up murder.
Shouts right.
Out. Not even like manslaughter or second degree.
But at the same time, like, that is a really localized way of attacking the problem.
Yeah.
We're just letting the companies who are, you know, providing the pills continue to do so and just getting mad at the doctors who are, you know, like we said, dealing with drug addicts who are fucking angry and like, you know, physically threatening and, you know, saying like, give me the drugs that are my right. You know, so
just like I was saying earlier, you know, Stranger Things doesn't talk about this, but a show that does is The Wire. And they talk about like how like the police keep focusing on like those low level, mid level drug dealers. And it's like, that's never going to solve the problem. That's kind of what these doctors are, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Your doctors are your Bodies.
Right.
We can keep putting Bodhi in jail, but
God,
there'll just be a new Bodhi.
Rest in peace, Bodhi. All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. And we're back. So I wanted to talk in our last two stories. I wanted to talk about the sweepstakes to be the location of Amazon HQ2.
Oh, my God.
And then, Edgar, you wanted to talk about Gordon Hayward's.
Oh, I'm going to talk about it.
I don't know why that was so
sensual. It's like horrific sports injuries. Get ready.
Make sure I get that base ready.
There are all these towns, like, from Denver, which you've probably heard of, to down to Frisco, Texas, that are part of the sweepstakes. Amazon has announced that they are going to open their second headquarters. Their first headquarters, obviously, in Seattle. They're like, we're looking for the location of our HQ2 and, you know, come at us with your offers. And they've kind of opened up this public bidding process where people are trying to woo them via viral videos. We actually have a clip from the viral video from Frisco, Texas, a city you've probably never heard of, but that thinks that they can get the second headquarters of Amazon there.
Amazon, you're growing your business, and we want to grow with you. That's why we think Frisco, Texas is the perfect fit for HQ2. Here in the city of Frisco, we live, work, and play by our motto, Progress in Motion!
We have caught the energy of Frisco. We've got it. It's the flu, the Frisco flu.
Best place to raise a family. Best place to raise an athlete. Best place to relocate your business.
According to my mom.
Frisco is primed to have you.
Ooh.
Prime, like Amazon Prime.
Hey, Alexa.
What?
Where should Amazon locate HQ2?
In Frisco, Texas.
Oh, shit.
Let them know, Frisco.
What an idea. So, by the way, literally every viral video created by every city ends with that exact same bit where they're like, hey, Alexa. It's just like this sort of, it reminds me of early 20th century, like, America's being sucked dry by these monopolies and, you know, these small towns, like, they've, like, shut down all these mom-and-pop stores and, you know, basically drank everyone's milkshake from, you know, taking all the resources from these small towns. And
is that a There Will Be Blood reference?
Yeah.
What's going on?
pulling them to, like, Seattle and Arkansas. So this is what we're left with, is, like, a sweepstakes to get the one big monopoly to, like, come to your town
and deliver
make
the
you
death
matter
blow.
Again. Yeah.
Feels like a Coen Brothers movie.
Right. And I don't know. It's like a 21st century version of, like, Willy Wonka or, like, some Dickensian tale where, like, people are just, like, hoping against hope that they get, like, the golden ticket.
The irony of it all,
that
too.
That is what Willy Wonka's about. You just hit me hard right now. I had never thought about that.
Yeah, everybody's super poor, and then there's this, like, one giant, like, corporate headquarters that is, like, a, you know, golden kingdom that you get gain admittance
version,
to.
The movie version makes Willy Wonka the hero.
Right.
But that's not true.
Right.
You just fucked up my childhood.
Tear down that myth. Tear down that myth.
Well, yeah. But I mean, that, you know, these monopolies are literally like sucking all these towns across America dry. They're like bleeding them dry by, you know, putting all their stores, all their local commerce out of business. So
yeah, like, why
this
am I gonna
is
go to
all we have left is like hoping one of them will like come close by and, you know, shine a little light on your sad little town.
Painfully ironic.
If Whataburger came to my town and made like a Whataburger park, I'd play there every day.
Well, so the other issue is that
like more than another park.
There's
like.
So the other issue is no such thing as a Whataburger park. But also, so Amazon like, I don't think these towns are going to get as much out of this as they think they're going to. Mm-hmm. In Seattle, Amazon being located there has driven rapid gentrification. So now it's like, instead of being like the place that birthed grunge, it's just a bunch of like rich dorks. And you know, there will be also lower paying jobs, but, that means that people who will work those lower paying jobs will be, have to move like further and further out into the exurbs until, you know, there was this story in the New York Times about a person who worked for one of the big tech companies in like a low wage job, and she had to wake up at 2:15, take two trains and a bus to get to work by 7 a.m. because Jeez. She couldn't afford anything nearby, like where those companies are located.
But what if she rode the Whataburger bus?
Right.
The Whataburger Express.
Right. Yeah. The Whataburger coaster that just takes you to the.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Too much? Too
embrace
much with the coaster?
Yeah, the coaster was too far.
Sorry.
Yeah, and again, like, these jobs are, like, I'd be also, too, very, like, white-collar or, like, high, like, there are many highly skilled jobs that are needed at these companies, too, that might not necessarily serve the communities. At
right.
These, at
It'll these. Make the mayor super rich, so I understand why the mayors are, like, yeah, super psyched
right,
about
right,
this,
right.
But
or
it's
the people in
probably
Damn.
Not going to be good for everybody else.
And shots fired.
Also, Amazon is demanding and probably going to get tax breaks from wherever they end up getting located. So it's not like it's the city's going to get a lot richer. So yeah, I mean, obviously it'll be good for property values. So, you know, there are people who will get rich, besides the mayor, I guess, but a lot of it just feels like the, you know, when cities are pitching themselves as the location for a future Olympics, and then, you know, they end up with, you know, people getting displaced and a bunch of soccer stadiums that are just crumbling, and you know, a gondola tour going over the favelas so that rich people can ride over the ghetto and like point to all the poor people. It's just something that, you know, people are writing about that is, I don't know, I find it more depressing than other people seem to be like, what a fun story.
Yeah,
everybody's competing for.
They won. It's like, no, everyone's been destroyed by this massive corporation. And then ironically, they're begging them to be like, okay, well, can you just show us a little
right.
favor? Give us something, a shred of hope.
Yeah. I was excited for this story until you bummed me out. And
hey.
I no longer have Frisco fever.
Frisco. Yeah, the Frisco flu.
Yeah, the Frisco flu, yeah.
But despite that sad story, has that changed your enthusiasm about talking about Gordon Hayward's horrific leg break?
Oh, absolutely yeah. not. Drop the bass.
Let's end with some fun stuff.
2 days ago was my holy day, which was opening day for the NBA.
Yes.
And I was very excited to watch the Celtics play the Cavs. I don't think that it was an accident that those two teams played each other. I think it was intentional. Even though the trade didn't happen yet, I think Adam Silver knew all along, so I was very stoked for this high-stakes game.
Shout-outs to young Nosferatu.
Mm-hmm. And then in, like, about 5 minutes into the game, Gordon Hayward landed on his foot pretty awkwardly, and his ankle twisted in the opposite direction, and they showed it on live television, and he's pretty much out indefinitely, like a hard indefinitely with what they're calling a fractured ankle.
Yeah, but his ankle was pointing the other direction.
Yeah.
It was one of the more gruesome injuries, like, in the history of nationally televised sporting events.
Yeah, they showed it on the Jumbotron and had to stop the game for 20 minutes because there was so much pandemonium in the stadium.
Yeah, I'm sure people were, like, dry heaving.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, watching horrific leg breaks is, like, it's, like, the worst shit to see.
Yeah.
Because you have to imagine, it's hard to look at someone's foot twist all the way backwards and not immediately think, like, look at your own foot and be like, oh, fuck, no.
Yeah.
No.
Who was announcing that game?
I want to say it was Kevin Harlan.
They knew immediately.
Oh, but the way they were processing it, like, live was like, oh, he's gone down. Oh, God. Yeah, he's broken his leg. Gordon Hayward, like, you knew he was just trying to scream, like, oh, my fucking God, it's so fucked
right.
up. But he knew, like, let me have some sense of professionalism.
I have to be the most calm person here.
Yeah.
All the players, like, you know, like how when someone's injured, you try to go down to like reach out to him. They did that, saw the injury, and just all dispersed, yeah, running away screaming. Like, it was the
that
most insane.
That must have
insane.
Felt good for Gordon Hayward.
Well, like, what's crazy is like, he knew immediately, because then Jaylen Brown still went up for the putback dunk and almost landed on it. And then you just see him like jump, like hopping on his butt. It was just the most insane scene. But that being said, all my friends showed up late. So with each person that showed up, I would stop the game and be like, dude, you got to check this show.
Jesus.
And I've been doing that for like the last 2 days, is showing people.
What, yeah. So why are you obsessed with the horrific? Like, what is it about it that you're like?
That they showed it on live television. It's insane that they were like, yo, everyone needs to see. Like, the guy had a perfect shot of it.
Yeah. And it was like suddenly a war injury happened in the middle of a sporting event. It was just like his leg was not there.
I've never seen that before.
Yeah. I mean, the Paul George one was equally horrific.
But they didn't show it. Like, you have to like zoom in to see it.
Right.
God, it's fucking...
Well, and you know, that also happens pretty frequently, like in professional soccer too. Like some fucking nasty.
You're not gonna get me to watch soccer, Miles. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, not even for the leg breaks, because I can show you some ones. If you thought that Gordon Hayward one is bad, I can show you ones that you're gonna be like, oh, that was the Pixar version of a leg break.
I mean, I'm interested.
I got the Darren Aronofsky definitely version of a sports leg break.
Yeah. I'm gonna be confused at the end and realize that it's actually a religious movie.
Shouts to Darren.
Yeah. That was a mother reference.
Yeah. It's about the creation of a man.
Yeah. I think the other issue is that I genuinely like Paul George and Gordon Hayward. And so, like, yeah, I think I would actually prefer to watch soccer players, like, just break their leg.
Because you don't care about them.
Yeah. And
oh,
because
man,
they're
I care
like,
about them. Oh, Eduardo da Silva. Oh, my God.
I mean, I'm just
Aaron Ramsey.
I'm interested to see if Boston is still going to have a good season. I mean, I feel like that was like a significant pickup for them. And to lose him like that is like,
yeah, it's a tough break. And anything fun to go out on, guys?
Oh, I have something fun. There's this trend on the internet right now from New Yorkers. It's like these, like, I guess Vine's dead. So like, they're like these Twitter videos that I think are phenomenal, where someone will go to a restaurant and try a piece of food and really enjoy it to the point that they start yelling and destroying things in the restaurant. And yeah, it's very funny.
I saw that. The dude just like,
this pizza's so fucking good.
So a guy, he took a bite of pizza, lifted his friend up, body slammed him on the table, which I thought was funny. But then he like went behind the counter at the pizza place as the pizza place was like, yo, man, stop.
Yeah,
stop.
Yeah, yeah.
And he started like tearing shit down. I was like, yo,
don't take it there.
Yeah, don't take it there.
It's
like,
so funny.
As long as you're just hurting yourself and your friend, that's cool. But I mean, that is a place of business. But yeah,
that's
Edgar and
note.
his mean millennial sense of humor, you know. I'll tell you what, kids these days. All right, Edgar, thank you so much for coming on for the second time, two times.
It's my pleasure. I want those Alec Baldwin numbers.
Yeah. Edgar, where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram at awfulgram. You can find me on Twitter at Edgar Montplaisir, and that's Montplaisir. And then you can find me on UCB Herald Night. Check me out with my team, Leroy, Mondays, Thursdays, or Fridays.
In Los Angeles.
If you're ever out in Los Angeles. UCB Franklin, or sometimes UCB Sunset.
Miles, where can people find you?
You know, even despite at Balder the Brave calling me out, telling people where you can find me, you will find me Googling some horrific leg breaks that I show Edgar right now so we can end this shit. He will watch some soccer.
Oof. And you can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. You can follow the Daily Zeitgeist at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter, at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook page, The Daily Zeitgeist. Come be our fan, be our friend.
Be our family.
Yeah, that's a little too far. That's kind of culty. And we will have footnotes up in the next week or so.
Anna's also promising that the page will be nothing but those videos of those guys in New York trying food and hurting themselves.
And soccer leg breaks.
All right, talk to you guys tomorrow, because it is a daily show. Is that my catchphrase now?
I think so.
Yeah. It's not great. Not great. We're working on it. Bye.
This pizza's so fucking good. I drink your milkshake. I drink it up.